What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Unpaved with Sean Salisbury. I am Adam Sager. We got a great guest coming up here in just a few seconds with Trey Wingo. Sean, NFL kicks off tomorrow night. Cowboys, Eagles. How excited are you for the NFL season to get going?
Segs, I'm pumped. And our next guest, who knows a lot about the Dallas Cowboys, and will have a hardcore opinion on the man who's general manager, owner, coach, Gatorade handout guy, and trade people at the wrong time, Jerry Jones. We'll get to Trey in just a second. I'm looking forward to talking to my former teammate and one of the best I've ever worked with, and we'll get to him. I'm excited about the game, Segs. There's a couple things, and we'll get into it after we get Trey on and come back out of it. We got a lot to cover today. Is one, the Dallas Cowboys defense, you weakened a team. So does the trade help them early? Not at all, because you weakened your defense now 3 years from now. But if the Packers are picking below 25, you know, below the 20s, we've discussed, then what happens? Is the trade worth it for the Packers? And in truth, the Packers want this to pay off. And how healthy is Micah Parsons? We're going to find out with the needle and stuff how much he plays. On the Philadelphia side, I'm talking about with Micah Parsons, the Packers this Sunday, Segs. As far as the Cowboys go, losing Micah Parsons, how will their defense show up against one of the more versatile offenses in the league, bandwidth-wise? Run it. They can spread you out in the pass game. They can also spread you out in the pass game and run it. They can tighten it up and still get the ball in space. And their offensive line's been dominant. And this defense, they didn't get any worse this offseason. So the hunger factor, it exists. Can they stay hungry after closing out that deal? So let's bring in our guy, Trey Wingo, right now. Segs, thank you. We'll be back here in about 15 minutes, 20 minutes. But I got my guy, Trey, in, longtime partner on ESPN, as good an NFL live host there ever was, longtime radio host. And, well, I was going to say 30 years, Trey, but I don't know, two decades, three. Well, it doesn't really matter. Who's counting, right?
At this point, I'm glad we can still count, Sean.
Yes, who gives a fuzzy? I can count strokes, too. But it's great to have you on. And at the end, Trey, I want you, with all the projects you have, if it's not this show, a betting show, it's another, you are, you're ubiquitous. Good word, Trey.
Speaking tremendous of SAT good poll right there, Sean. Hey, fight on, baby.
USC education, brother. That's right. So, by the way, you could be the stand-in for Owen Wilson on the new stick. You could. If nobody's told you that. I was thinking about it watching it. We'll get to that. Because you could actually be the guy standing, because you got the similar, taller than him, but similarities. Yeah. But your nose is a lot better, too. Owen Wilson.
Not broken enough.
There you go. And Trey, the new project you're about to start, and I love the name of the show. And we'll get to that, because I think you and I are on the same page when it comes to, well, how the media is at times these days and how they get their point across. Yeah. But before we do that, let's start with these Eagles and Cowboys on Thursday. Trey, I know your affinity for the Cowboys over the years as a Baylor guy and just all the years we worked together on NFL Live and Sports Centers and the rest. Cowboys got weaker. Do you think they needed to clear house because of the headache? Is the headache bigger than the talent? What do we see from the Cowboys in 2025?
I don't know, Sean. That's a great question. There's no clear direction. There's no clear path. They absolutely got weaker. And, you know, when I talk about Jerry Jones, I think you need to put it in two separate categories. As an owner, he's marvelous. Like, the league is better because Jerry Jones is an owner. They made more money because Jerry Jones is an owner. Remember, the league had an endorsement deal, just national endorsement deals that they split up 32 ways, or how many teams there were back in the early 90s, maybe just 28. And Jerry said, well, that's cool, but I'm going to do my own deals for my stadium as well. And the NFL said, sued him, said, you can't do that. He countersued. And they eventually, with the help of Bob Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, they realized, wait a minute, he's going to make us a lot more money, all of us, if we allow to do this. So he made every owner richer. He made the NFL more popular. He made the Cowboys stink, and they get higher ratings than any other team. So as an owner and a businessman, he's fantastic. The one thing Jerry wants to be is a player personnel guy, and he is awful at it. He is the worst general manager in the league, and I have no problem saying this based on information. It's not an opinion. They haven't won a divisional game, Sean, divisional playoff game, since 1995, or the 1995 season, January 96. That's 30 years. So what other general manager would go three decades without a significant playoff win and still have a job? The answer is no one. The only way you keep that job as a general manager if you know the owner. And the general manager knows the owner because Jerry is the owner as well as the general manager. The Cowboys and Jerry needs, and I don't think he ever will. They'll never be taken seriously as a team that can be built the right way as long as Jerry has a say in the matter.
You know, Trey, I talked to Ed Werder last week, and he was talking when Jerry went into the Hall of Fame, and it validates what you're saying, that Jerry went in as an owner, but in truth, he'd trade it if he could go in as a personnel guy, like a Bill Polian. And the ego, while not only an owner, but the greatest marketer maybe in the world too, right, Trey? I mean, he's in the conversation. But on the flip side of it is his ego, the same thing that makes him great in one side of that business is going to same thing that's going to keep him from another championship ring, correct?
Absolutely. Look, you know, Jerry was asked this a couple of years ago by one of the stations that I think, you know, does the Cowboy games in Dallas. And he said, well, if I brought in somebody to be the general manager and they came to me with a trade or a person they want to draft, he said, well, who do you think's going to be the one that decides that? And I'm like, yeah, that's the problem. You've just stated the problem. You need to divorce yourself from that process. And I want to be clear, the Cowboys have had some really good drafts. You know, they're really good at drafting offensive linemen. Obviously, CeeDee Lamb was a hit. Micah was a hit. But team construction is the problem. And they've had some major whiffs, too, in the recent years. They took Taco Charlton at 2017 in the 28th spot in the 2017 draft. T.J. Watt was still on the board. And the Steelers took him two players later. When Jerry says, well, you know, we got to improve our run defense. Yeah, because you blew it on Mazi Smith, the defensive tackle out of Michigan. He can't play. He was going to get cut from what I've heard from insiders. But the Cowboys didn't want that headline around, especially if they were going to trade Micah Parsons. And this idea that Micah is somehow a problem against the run is preposterous. Now, I'm not a huge DVOA, all this kind of stuff guy, but EPA in the NFL is expected points allowed, okay? The Cowboys, over the last 4 years, when they had Micah Parsons on the field, were the best EPA defense in football. When he was off the field, and we're talking about a summary, so it's not a small sample size of over 1,000 plays, they were the second worst. So if you want to talk about fixing the defense against the run, trading Micah ain't the answer. I'm tired of the – I don't know if we can swear here. But
you can say whatever you want. Tired of the bullshit?
I'm tired of the bullshit, okay? Don't sit there and tell me you made the team better. You get two draft picks to try and find a guy like Micah Parsons. And when you have him, you keep him. The Cowboys made the fatal mistake, Sean, of waiting for somebody else to set the market. A year ago, if they had gone ahead of the game and found a way to sign Micah, as an edge rusher, he would have made $32, $33 million a year. But now when you let Myles Garrett and T.J. Watt set the market, now guess what happens? You then have to match their number. So the Cowboys' fatal mistake in the whole Micah Parsons thing was not getting ahead of the game. But it goes beyond that. Why couldn't they get ahead of the game? Well, it goes back to when they decided to pay Ezekiel Elliott $52 million, a running back, when he was already beginning to split time with Tony Pollard at the time.
And Pollard was better at the time, Trey.
He was, yes.
More explosive at the time.
Yes, so now they pay the running back before they pay the quarterback, which means they've got to get rid of Amari Cooper, who just resigned with the Raiders. But if you go back and look at Amari Cooper's time with the Cowboys, he and Dak were in sync. Those two connected. I think their completion rate on third down was the best in the NFL over the time frame they were together. But they couldn't keep Amari, so they had to let him go, okay? So then you pay Dak, and I'm happy for any athlete to get all the money they can. Dak Prescott should never be the highest paid quarterback in football. Let's just be honest about it. He got that title. Okay, so now you got to chase CeeDee Lamb's money, right? So now you have CeeDee Lamb and you have Dak with huge dollars. Well, we can't afford to pay Micah. You created this problem for yourself. And the interesting thing about it would have been in the best interest of the Cowboys to tag Micah this year and then sign him next year. Now, why do I say that? Because this is the first year of these new big contracts for Dak and CeeDee. You offset some of that cap money with a signing bonus or however you want to do it. So their cap number is actually low. The balloon comes up in the second year. So it actually makes a lot of sense to sign Micah next year when you have these other big cap hits. So the balloon payment is not in 2026, but it's in 2027. They didn't even get that far. They didn't even get to that point. They have mismanaged the cap and this team to such a point that they're always chasing their own tail. And that's something that good teams and good front office people and player personnel people never put themselves in.
Yeah, like a gambler. Don't chase the money, right?
Good Trey, money after bad. Exactly right.
That's exactly right. Trey Wingo, award-winning sportscaster. You've seen him, a longtime teammate of mine at ESPN, and as good as there is and as passionate as there is in the business. Trey, with the Cowboys coaching situation, now, this is not disrespect. I love Dave Campbell, yeah. And I love Wade sure. Phillips and Jason. I do. When I say I love them, much respect. We know how hard the job right. is. And hell, your and I's affinity for Marty Schottenheimer goes far Absolutely. And beyond coaching, right? God rest his soul. And the yeah. family, great football family. But when you hire coaches, Jerry, like the personnel, is never going to let anybody have Trump him in the building, correct? Is that why we don't yeah. get, not they're good, that they don't get the marquee name that they go after? And right. not only with that, Trey, when you think about it, I can never have the face of my franchise, and you tell me if I'm wrong, a successful franchise over the yeah. course of time. I can never let the face of the franchise be the owner.
No,
you're
right.
Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Jerry's the only owner / GM that holds a press conference after every game. Right. He's the only one.
Right.
And our teammate Mark Schlereth, for all those years at ESPN, had the greatest line ever about Jerry. He said, it's one thing to hire a coach. It's another thing to empower a coach. There's only been two coaches that Jerry has empowered, Jimmy Johnson and Bill Parcells. And in the end, those were the most successful runs he's had during his time as the owner. You can say whatever you want about Barry Switzer. Yes, they won a Super Bowl with him. That was Jimmy's team. Those were Jimmy's players. Let's just be honest about it. I mean, Barry, his introduction.
You would have had to really screw that one up, right?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, he basically said we're going to run the same plays. Like, he didn't change anything. So, I good for Barry. I like him. He's a fun guy. I think we all know what that was. The point being, Jerry empowered two guys, and he gave them the authority. He hasn't done that for anybody else, whether it's Dave Campbell, whether it's Jason Garrett, who he hung on way too long because he remembered Jason as the third-string quarterback that came into that Thanksgiving Day game in 1994 when Troy and everybody else was hurt and threw three touchdown passes to beat the Packers. Like, that's how Jason Garrett had that gig for as long as he had it, because he didn't see him as a coach. He saw him as that guy who was part of those 90s Cowboys dynasties. So both Bill Parcells and Jimmy Johnson, to some degree, got fed up with the bullshit. And they said, I can't take it anymore. Right. And I do believe that Mike McCarthy on that level is probably going to be looked at again. String him along on another one-year contract. I think they should have gotten rid of him before last year when they had that playoff blowout loss to Green Bay. The Cowboys had the second longest home winning streak in franchise history. And that season had the best points scored at home in the NFL and the best turnover differential in the NFL.
And Green Bay kicked their ass, right?
Kicked their ass up and down the field. That's when you should have gotten rid of Mike McCarthy. But I think Mike McCarthy at this point said, I don't want to go on this one-year contract again crap. So I think he kind of walked away as well. So, yeah, I like Brian Schottenheimer. Okay, and I'll tell you, one of my favorite things about Brian is that when he was an assistant for the Jets, I'm not sure if you were still there at that time.
I was. That's when they won the NFC champion. They led the league in rushing, and that was when Rush was, of course, yeah.
He came up one day during the summer and sat in with us at a production meeting. He wanted to watch NFL Live and how we went about preparing for the show. And I had so much respect for Brian for that, because he wanted to know, I know what I do to prepare my players. I want to see what you guys do to get ready to talk about us and talk about these teams. Now, whether that means he's going to be a successful head coach, I don't know, but I really respected that for him. So I want Brian to succeed. But again, at the end of the day, every player in that locker room knows if they want something, they don't talk to the coach. They talk to the GM and the owner.
Trey, when I say the Philadelphia Eagles are clearly the best, if I say they're clearly the best team in the NFC, maybe the NFL.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me the opposition and why there's a threat to their throne this year, and who is
it? I think you have to start with them, and then can they do what the Kansas City Chiefs most recently did? Can they find a way to repeat? Here's my biggest concern for Philadelphia, and people are going to go crazy when I say this. But it's Saquon Barkley. Now, hold on. Let me explain. This is not a hot take. This is not a wild opinion.
I saw a bunch of those this morning on some other shows, dude. You're good.
Kill me. He's the ninth 2,000-yard rusher in NFL history. So I went back and looked at the numbers of what happens the year after you run for 2,000. And the most remarkable thing was some had very successful runs. Several of them got hurt very early. But I looked at the yards per carry specifically, and the drop-off was significant. Like, let's just start with OJ. He averaged 6 yards a carry. By the way, I don't care what you think about him as a person. OJ in 2003, 14 games, 2003 yards, still the greatest single rushing season
in
the history of the NFL.
And maybe the best combination college and NFL running back of all time, Barry Sanders in the conversation.
Correct. Right? But anyway, OJ in 73 averaged 6 yards a carry. It went down to 4. And you go down the list, everybody, whether it's Derrick Henry, Adrian Peterson, the yards per carry drop off the year after 2000 is about anywhere from 1.5 to 2 yards. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you those big time explosive plays that you see with regularity in a 2000 yard season, probably not going to be there again this next year. And I know the Eagles still have one of the greatest lines in the NFL, but the wear and tear your body goes through in a 2000 yard season shows up the next season. And let's add in the fact that Saquon is the only one of the 9 2,000 yard rushers in NFL history to actually go to the Super Bowl. So not only do you have the wear and tear of a 2,000 yard season, then you have 3 extra games you play in the postseason. And I think Saquon will probably run for 1,400 to 1,500 yards this year, which is a tremendous season. But that also means those 60-yard, 70-yard, 90-yard runs where he's jumping sideways over people and kung fu fighting in the air aren't going to be there with the regularity. So we're going to have to find another way for the Philadelphia Eagles, based on the statistical data, to have more explosive plays. And I thought we saw a hint of that in the Super Bowl. The Chiefs did an amazing job in selling out to stop Saquon Barkley.
He got his touches, but not his yards. And as our guy Russ, Baxter will tell you, it's the touches or the carries, not the yards with them. No doubt. Great stat.
Correct. So then we saw that Jalen Hurts found a way to make those big plays against really good corners. And I think they're going to have to do that on a regular basis this year if they're going to be as explosive as they were with Saquon last year.
What NFL team puts a smile on your face, say, we're not talking about them enough, or that you say they are a challenge this year, even though they're not in the Buffalo, Baltimore, Philadelphia range?
Right.
Who you like?
Well, I do love one team, but it's all on one very big question. And I think the Rams are loaded.
I agree.
If they had played that playoff game somewhere besides Philadelphia, I think they win it. I mean, like the snow, people say it's the same for both teams, but it's not. Once a power running team, not as an air show. I mean, it's not the same. So, but you're right. When I hear a 37-year-old quarterback in his, 17th season, is dealing with his back and sort of moderating his back in preseason, that's a huge red flag. I'm going to watch Matthew Stafford games like this, the way I watch every time Tua's
Right.
So, if they will go as far as Matthew Stafford's back can take them, and I think it can take them a long way, but I am scared to death when I hear a 37-year-old in year 17 or 18 is monitoring and his back, because you one hit and we're done. You could sneeze with a bad back and be out of a game on Sunday.
Right. Is it fair to say it's Josh and like Augusta moving day on Saturday that Josh and Lamar are at the point, Trey, know how great they've been, spectacular, but that we're going to lump them into the January didn't quite get it done guys yet? Are we there yet, or are we close?
I think there's more of that on Lamar than there is on Josh. And let me explain again. Josh Allen is the first quarterback. And you know my position, wins and losses are not a quarterback stat. Teams win games, teams win championships. But the NFL keeps this stat. Josh Allen is the only quarterback in the history of the NFL to start his career losing 4 times to the same quarterback or the same team in Kansas City. No one has ever done that. So it's a huge mental hurdle. However, when you look at those games, Tyler Bass missed the field goal that would have sent the game to overtime a couple of years ago. Josh Allen was perfect against the Chiefs in the 2021 divisional playoff game. And then they decided, for one reason I will never understand, to kick the ball out of the back of the end zone, thus giving the Chiefs those 2 timeouts and 13 seconds to play with, which was the stupidest decision of all time. You can look at the way Josh has played and say it wasn't great, but he's also really done well in the postseason. There are still those lingering questions about Lamar, the 2 turnovers in the first half against the Bills, the way they played the AFC Championship game the year before against the Chiefs in Baltimore, where he threw a couple of costly interceptions. So I think that you can say Josh has risen to the occasion. The team didn't rise with him. And I understand that last year Lamar played much better in the second half, and Mark Andrews should have caught that 2-point conversion. Maybe we're going to overtime in that situation, but the haven't gotten it done yet. I think Lamar has 3 playoff wins in his career, or 4. To put it in perspective, I mean, Patrick Mahomes has 3 Super Bowl wins, okay? And Lamar with the Ravens, they haven't done it. I think there's more pressure on Lamar than Josh, but it's time for one of those two guys to knock off the bully. And I was in St. Louis, Missouri before I got to ESPN. Missouri's the show me state. You got to show me that you can do it before I'll believe it.
Got to knock out the champ to beat the champ, right, Trey? Got to knock him out. We're at that stage in the AFC. All right, my man, you and I, in all the years we covered the Patriots, which was daily on our show with Bill and with Tom. Now let's switch to college. The optics of walking on the sideline, the girl talk, I mean, all the stuff that I would have never, Trey, you could have said, Sean, I'll bet you $1 million that this happens. I'd have taken the other side. There is no way any outside distractions affecting his football team. Why? Yeah. And is Bill long for North Carolina?
Well, you know, I said this when it happened and no one really paid attention, but I'll say it again. In the contract he signed with North Carolina, he had a $10 million buyout, which means if he wants to leave, he's going to have to pay the school $10 million, which is a significant chunk of money. But on June 1st of this year, that buyout dropped from $10 million to $1 million. Now, you just don't arbitrarily put that in a contract, okay? You put that in a contract for a very specific reason. Well, why is that? Well, Bill Belichick was very offended by the comments made by Don Shula after the Spygate situation in 2007. And we can have a debate over whether you believe that it helped them or not, whatever. That's not the point. The point is, Don Shula said some stuff that pissed Bill off. And he then told people, I'm going to break that record. That's what I want more than anything. So when you ask how long he's going to be at North Carolina, I don't know the answer to that, but I do know that he put that clause in that contract. You don't just arbitrarily say, hey, I got a crazy idea for a contract. Just for fun, let's just put this in here. Right. No, they wanted that in there in case there's an out for a job that Bill likes that comes up. Now, I'm not saying he's going to get one, especially after what we saw against TCU, go Frogs. But I do think that was in there for a reason. Bill eventually would love to get back in the NFL and take down Shula's record. Whether or not he gets there, I don't know. But that clause is there for that reason and that reason alone.
Who's itch to get back in is more right now? Do you think Saban has any itch to get back and coach college? And does Bill, you mentioned his itch. Whose itch with those friends is greater? You know, all things being equal, they said, you come back to your favorite job, you can go get your favorite NFL job. Who'd jump first?
I think Saban jumps first. I mean, at the end of the day, all these guys, and we talked about it even with Herm, when he was with us on NFL Live, when he went back to Arizona State, and he said, you know, Trey, I wanted to feel the grass under my feet. You know, Eric Mangini, who has done a lot of work with Fox and worked with us, he did a coach's clinic once and he had the clicker in his hand. And he said, Trey, I felt like it was the missing finger from my hand when I had it in there. If you're a coach, you're hardwired to it. It's not a fun job. It's a job that will probably kill you in the long run. You're hardwired, and Nick Saban is still hardwired. I think he absolutely, even though, you know, he says what he says about, I can't deal with the NIL and all that kind of stuff anymore. Coach is coach. I think he absolutely will jump back into college. Now, the Bill thing is interesting, right? Because I think if we're honest with ourselves, we need to look at Bill in a very different light. Honestly, when he was doing all the things with New England, he's the greatest coach of all time, and he's one of the top coaches of all time, right? But let's just look at the numbers. The numbers are what they are. 47 points was the most points he ever allowed in an NFL game. His first college game, he gave up 48. They'll get better. They'll figure it out. But did Bill's record with Tom Brady as his quarterback, the greatest player in the history of the game, either him or Jerry Rice, I don't care what you say, is 249 wins, 75 losses. That's a winning percentage of 77%, 76.9.
It's unheard
without
of.
Without Tom Brady in New England and Cleveland, 83-104, a winning percentage of 45%. That's a 32% drop in your win rate because you had the greatest player of all time. Now, look.
So you tell me that Bill, position matters, Trey?
Little bit. And then when you look at that run he had in the AFC, none of the other teams were ever any good, right? Dolphins, Jets, Bills, they were all terrible during that run. Now take a guy like Andy Reid. Andy Reid is the winningest coach both in Philadelphia and Kansas City. No one's ever done that. He has over 100 wins with the Philadelphia Eagles, 100 wins with the Kansas City Chiefs. No one's ever had more than 100 wins with two different franchises. He's been to 6 Super Bowls. I get it. He's lost 3. He took guys like Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, Kevin Cobb out of Houston, Alex Smith, and now, of course, the great Patrick Mahomes. He's won consistently with all of those guys. I would argue quite significantly that is a much harder thing to do than have the guy for 20-plus seasons and just run with it. Hell, Tom Landry took two different starting quarterbacks to the Super Bowl. Don Shula drugged David Woodley to a Super Bowl as a starting quarterback. And then, of course, Joe Gibbs, the greatest stat line of all time, three Super Bowls, three wins with three different starting quarterbacks. I would say to you, those things are way harder to do than just ride the back of the guy who is the GOAT of all time. Bill had a huge part in that. I want to be clear. But let's look at it through the proper context when we talk about it.
Bill was the New England coach at the right time, brother. You get my point.
He's exactly right.
All right, to Arch Manning. Hell, I'm not telling you anything about a family that we don't love and admire, and then everybody from top to bottom. And hell, I'll take Coop for an interview for 4 hours too, because he's as funny as it gets.
Absolutely.
We are unfair. Everybody's got to be Mahomes or, you know, play That's like ridiculous. That the second they walk off a campus or jump into the NFL. Trey, if I said here's $10,000 by the end of his college career, we'll be talking elite or we'll be talking overrated. Where are you rolling with this after week one when I listen to people already calling him the best? It's absurd. Okay.
Yeah. I would lean towards, you know, great.
Right.
But nobody knows anything at this point. Let's just be honest about it. Okay. By the way, that's the toughest place you can start. Defending champions at home at the Horseshoe in Columbus, Ohio State. That's a tough task. And he didn't play well. Let's be honest. Didn't play great. There were some mechanics that were off. But guess what? When you feel pressure, everybody's mechanics are off. Go back and look at the 2015 AFC Championship game between the Broncos and the Patriots. They made Tom Brady look like Bernie Kosar in that game. He was all over the place. His mechanics were terrible. So I'm not defending Arch, but I'm also not going to throw him in the trash. And I hate this idea, what you just said. It's like we lost our minds in the preseason and the draft about Shedeur Sanders. Oh. And then when it was finally revealed, what everyone knew anyway, he was never going to be the starter. They were telling you that from day one. And he was always going to make the team. That's why they traded Kenny Pickett. So just everybody calm down. Everybody calm down about Arch. Paul Feinbaum said on multiple occasions before, he's going to be the greatest college quarterback since Tim Tebow. Based on what? Based on what? Your thoughts? Your feelings? There was nothing in the tape last season from Arch Manning that could lead you to logically come to that conclusion. So you say things either just to get a reaction or say things you don't really believe in just to get a reaction. And that's crap. Now, he could end up being really good, but there was nothing that you saw before that game at Ohio State that would lead you to make that conclusion logically.
And you know what, Trey? Had we come out of that game and his last name was Jones or whatever, I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
You know what we'd have said? Tough environment, made some really good plays, made some rough ones, got some improvement to make. But, man, let's see how this thing works out. We wouldn't be saying anything. We wouldn't be burying him. If he would have played great, we wouldn't be putting him in the Hall of Fame, which leads me to the media these days, Trey. Things have changed, okay? And from the time that we were sitting there to now, I'm not saying they can decide what they like better in the world.
Correct.
What bothers you the most about what we're seeing on our sports television these days?
Well, what we just talked about. Like, I don't think people that are saying things that they actually believe in, okay? Or if they're saying it, they're doing it just to get a reaction, which is why what we're doing is called the Straight Facts Homie Podcast, okay? Available on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your stuff. We've gained over 500 subscribers over the last 48 hours. We're over 26,000 on YouTube. The whole point of this is if you want to be yelled at and you want to be listen to people screaming, go for it. There's a million places you can find it. What we're going to do is look at things through the context of information, statistical data, and historical precedents, which is what we talked about with Bill Belichick or Saquon Barkley or Arch Manning.
Something really nobody's doing unless you find a certain site on Twitter that you got to read on, right? You're going to talk about
it. Yeah. Call me crazy. I want to be informed as a sports fan. I don't want people yelling at me, you know? I love Stephen A, and he's made a fortune doing this.
And good he works his ass off, no doubt about that. He's a tireless worker.
I've said this before. I would like to care about one thing in my life as much as Stephen A tries to pretend he cares about everything. Okay. Like he tried to convince me when I was still working, that we had him on the radio show at the time, that he believed that when the Chiefs went to that first Super Bowl and won 31-20, Super Bowl 54 over the 49ers, that they could have gotten there with Alex Smith. And I was like, they had Alex Smith. They drafted him because he couldn't do that. Come on, man. I don't believe you really believe what you're saying right now. And you know who else would tell you that? Alex Smith. He's like, I couldn't do those things. Because he was saying, oh, you know, Mecole Hardman, Tyreek Hill, you know, Sammy Watkins, Byron Pringle, all that. No, man, the difference was 15.
Number 15,
the difference,
yeah.
The difference. And you know who else thought that? Andy Reid, who, by the way, had all these other quarterbacks. So just don't tell me things that I think you don't believe. I love Colin Cowherd. Love him to death. He's a friend of mine. Maybe not anymore because I'm calling him out on some crap. Like he said in May after rookie minicamp, I've seen enough. I'm calling the state of Ohio for Shedeur Sanders. From rookie minicamp against guys that will be working in another job in about 3 months? You don't believe that. I know you don't believe that. You're just saying that.
Too smart to believe it, right, Trey? Yes. They're too
you're
smart.
You're smarter
right?
than that,
yeah.
Yes.
Right.
So I want no part of that anymore. I saw a tweet the other day where someone says, hey, the Panthers have a chance to make a real statement in week one. Literally every team in every game has a chance to make a statement in week one. It's week one.
I'm going to make a statement in week one, and I'm in my living room, Trey. I can hear it off
I want to eat pasta for dinner. That's my statement. So I just, everyone take a deep breath, man. Not everything is a litmus test. Not everything is the highest of the Himalayas, and everything else is the lowest of the depths of Satan's spawn in hell. Okay? Let's find a middle ground where we can actually talk and have communication and do it based on information. And that's what this podcast is all about.
Look, who's involved in the show? Is it going to be different guests from the analytic data world? How are you doing this?
Yeah.
Co-host, or is it just you bringing people in and talking?
It's me going through things that happen. And then we, for example, we brought in Mark Schlaer to preview the season. We just had Tom Telesco on, the longtime Chargers general manager, talking about how it takes to build a team. We just had Brandel Chambly on. Last week talking about the year on the
PGA we're covering
tour.
It all just like you always do, right?
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. Like just to put together like the Scottie Scheffler Tiger Woods thing in perspective. Scottie's been unbelievable, and people say, oh, he's better than Tiger. I'm like, no, it's not close. I'll give you an example. Scottie Scheffler's 68.11, or was right around there at the season, was the fifth best scoring average in the history of the tour, behind Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods, Tiger Woods, and Tiger Woods. And then after fifth, Tiger Woods is sixth, Tiger Woods is seventh.
Okay. So you tell me he's a pretty good player?
He's a pretty good player. Like Scheffler, by the way, when he won the Open, was his 10th straight time converting a 54-hole lead into a title. Amazing, 10 straight times. That's the longest run on tour since Tiger did it 37 straight times. And one other note here on this. And again, not denigrating Scheffler. He's doing Tiger-like things. He's just got to do it for a much longer time.
Right.
He's number one in the world. And for him to surpass Tiger's record of the most weeks at number one in the world on the PGA Tour or in golf, he would have to be number one in the world from the moment we're taping this to October of 2035 and not take a single week off. And only then would he tie Tiger Woods' record. So I love Scotty.
Today, right?
Over a decade and a month, okay? That's how long he would have to be number one just to tie Tiger. So I love Scotty. He's doing great things. But when you say he's better than Tiger, you're telling me you don't know anything about golf.
Trey, I'm so intrigued with this, the way you're doing the difference. You know, we're everybody looking for something different, but something different that I actually want to pay attention to. Not something different that's different because they just somebody yells different or somebody spews something different or throws stuff against the wall. I think it's awesome. Do you still love as much as you did? I know your passion for all this. Sports, broadcasting, information, laughs, all of it, entertainment. Do you still love it as much as when we were sitting on the set? Not just that show, but that the 15 years ago. Compare the two, your love and passion for both.
I'm still very passionate about, some things have waned. I love football. I will always love football. I love golf. It's my new obsession. I love golf to death. I think as you get a little older in life, you learn to say, okay, I'll let that go. Doesn't really mean that much to me. These things matter to me. And like we used to, there was a saying at ESPN back in the days, we don't take ourselves seriously. We take sports seriously. I feel like it's completely flipped.
Flip-flop.
Now we take ourselves seriously and the sports are just, hey, let me have a hot take about
they're getting in the way of my hot take, right?
Exactly. So for me, the passion for me now is I don't think I could do NFL Live anymore because it's basically an hour a day. And let's be honest, sometimes you had to make some shit up. Well, we got an hour to fill. What are we going to talk about today? So the beauty of this format for me is we come at you 3-4 times a week, talk for an hour, hour and a half, have a guest on, get into deep stuff. And that way we're cutting out all the crap. You know, we're cutting out all the fluff and all the kind of stuff. And I don't have time for it in my life. A lot of people don't have time for it anymore. Hey, if it works for you, great, go for it. That's not what I'm about. It's not what I want to do. I want to take this thing serious with a smile,
hell
obviously,
yeah,
and have some fun. Like when we did the Romo coaster thing, okay? It wasn't just to do it. It was to use the Romo coaster example of the highs and lows of what Tony was going through. In the first half, he was here. And then second half, he fell out. We used that as a way to make a point. It wasn't just, hey, let's film us on a roller coaster. That's a very different thing. We use that as a vehicle to make a point. And I that's what I want to do in this show, in this context, is just help people understand. I want to be smarter as a sports fan. I want people to learn. I want people to understand why things are the way they happen, not just because that's the way I feel about it.
I friggin' love it. All right, before I let you go, and I can't thank you enough, brother, you mentioned your passion. We're going to hit the Ryder Cup in a second. I'm with you.
Oh, man.
Now, dude, I was about to say, this dude has become as big a nut job as I am. Because, yeah. Trey, and I'm being honest, when I had Colt Nost on, who's, if you ever, when
love
you get
Colt.
Him on, I do too. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal dude and fun as hell, right? And you mentioned, I tell about 2 years ago, and this is the honest truth, and this probably shouldn't shock you with my past in the technology world. I never ordered a shirt or anything online in my life. I didn't trust the credit card, you know. And now every day, I'm looking at Travis Matthew and Red Van Lee. I'm going through it. I put stuff in the thing. And I say, well, that now got up to 15 shirts and it's $1,000. Yeah. Are you going to push send? So you have to be charged on your phone. Trey, I've gotten to the point where I'm so, and when I say I'm addicted and passionate about it, I'm understating it. I wake up and watch a GP, the World Tour, LPGA, it doesn't matter. And it's something that I know I'm never going to conquer it, but I see you on your trips, and I just went to Pebble Beach and Monterey, the Bay Peninsula, and played Cypress Point as well.
Yeah,
and
so
I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but I feel like you're the same way, jumping around, that vacations are venues and great golf trips and all that. It sucked you in, hasn't it? Because it has me as well. I'm ready to go be a Titleist golf ball rep and forget all this shit and just go go to the tour every week, dude. I'm just telling you.
I'm with you 100%.
Maybe it hits you. I know you've always liked it, but it's hit you across the face.
I'd say about the last 10 years. The last 10 years was a big thing for me. The kids were out of the house, and I had a lot of time, and I wanted to get better. Golf is life. Like, there are struggles. And you mentioned you chase it. Like the Vince Lombardi line about perfection. Gentlemen, we will chase perfection knowing we won't catch it, but on the way we will achieve excellence. Right. And I feel like that's sort of what golf is. Like it's perfect for the addictive personality. You hold on to it for a little bit and then it goes away and you're like, well, what the hell? How did that, like for five rounds in a row, I was crushing my driver. And the last few times out, where did this bananas ball come from? It's just, it's insane.
And you swear you didn't change your grip, your finish,
your
tempo. Oh, I know, dude. I'm a cross between Steve Pate, the volcano, and Wyndham Clark at the U.S. Open.
Yeah. I mean, you'll be banned from Oakland too.
Bob Rotella is going to get my sports psychologist call. I'm going to have him laying on the couch by the time I'm done talking golf with him, dude. I'm telling you.
It's just the best. It's the only sport you can play your whole life. And you play it normally in good weather when it's outside. Oh my God, just last night I was walking nine holes and I was like, I was having this moment like, oh my God, isn't it? It's me on a golf course. It's 70 degrees. It's in that little hazy, dusky twilight thing. Isn't this great? And then I make two bogeys in a row. I'm like, God damn. Where's the art now? The poetry is gone.
There's got to be a beer somewhere with a shot to follow. Trey, are you the type that gets out? Do you set out your outfits? I've gotten to that point. Where I'm matching up in the belt. Here I am telling you I have a nut job, as if you're saying, well, thanks, Captain Obvious.
Welcome to the car. What was the old Bruce Willis line? Welcome to the party, pal.
That's exactly right. Well, where's your next trip?
Actually going to play a member guest up at Scioto in Columbus end of the month with a good buddy of mine. We just got back from Cabot. If you ever get a chance to go up to Nova Scotia and play Cabot, Cape Breton, it's as pure as it gets. It's just fantastic.
It's going to be three wingos.
Sand Valley, also very good. Sand Valley, very good.
I was reading Golf Digest or Golf Magazine yesterday about Sand. Is that Wisconsin Sand Valley?
Yeah, Sand Valley's great.
I was reading about that over the weekend. I'm like, I have got to schedule my trip there. It's good to be Trey Wingo. I mean, it's always been good to be Trey Wingo. Solid ball striker. You know what I'm saying? Good golf. Good
little
golf.
Little rough around the greens. Johnny.
Well, you know what? I'm starting my tournament again. Obviously, you'll be there, but we need to take a trip, brother. Get some of the group together. I know about three or four of us that would love to hang around. You know who the group and just
we're
go play
the band back together.
Let's do
that'd
it.
Be great.
I will even do a fake set on the thing and see if we still got what we used to have, and we'll actually tell you something you want to hear.
We'll my give man, you some information along the way.
There you go. Tell them about the podcast one more time. It's going to be awesome, and you gave us a taste of that with that information we got today, brother.
Yeah, Straight Facts Homie, YouTube page, Trey Wingo, just put in my name, Amazon, Apple, Spotify, also part of the podcast. We're also doing a thing called In Play with Trey, a golf series. I filmed two courses in LA, Rustic Canyon and Black Gold. We're going to start filming a lot more courses, take people along for the ride, see the good, the bad, and the ugly of playing around the golf. So that's another part of it. It'll all be on my YouTube page, and the subscribers can get it all, and also just the podcast with all the information, Straight Facts Homie. And homage to Randy Moss. When he was asked about how you're going to pay that fine, you're going to write him a check. He goes, hell no, straight cash, homie. So we're just going to give you the straight facts, homie. That's what
I friggin' love it. And dude, you and I bet brave the wavelength coming, because I've said that all these things you're saying about golf and applying it and make it fun and bringing people in. Same page, brother, but it doesn't shock me. We've been on the same page for a long time. I love you, man. You enhance.
Love you too, Shawnee.
Always great to see you. My best to your family, and hit them straight, brother, and let me know when we can get together and do it, and I'll be watching. And great shit as always.
Thanks, brother. Call me anytime.
I will. That's Trey Wingo, one of my favorites, and you can tell my favorite thing is when a guy doesn't shy, and he knows me, doesn't shy away from an opinion, but it's a respectful one that's firm and fair and not personal. Seems pretty logical. Segs, pop on back in here. I think Trey is outstanding. And Segs, he brought up those numbers, man. Thanks for your patience. He's a great listener, as you know. We've talked about him when you and I have worked together for years. Yeah, and one of the great traffic cops when we were doing our show, because you know what's great is all those taglines he had, like throwing to break over statistics. Now you're going to get to hear him with a guy who also has great knowledge of sports and a bandwidth to bring people in. He mentioned something about Philadelphia that was interesting. The Barkley thing.
Yeah.
The numbers are real. The question is, will it affect Saquon Barkley again? Your thoughts on that?
I mean, Saquon's just one of those dudes who
kind of a misty guy too, right? Doesn't take the clean hit all the time because he's so shifty.
Right. He doesn't take big hits mostly. You know, he's able to dodge those linebackers coming in for those big hits, even on short runs. You know, he's able to get down and that kind of stuff. I don't know if it will affect him. Yeah, I don't think he's going to rush for 2,000 yards again, but 1,500, I think is
that's an MVP type season still.
Right. Especially, and I say that because of that offensive line. That offensive line is so good. I mean, it is it's the best offensive line in football by a lot.
Right.
Not just, it's not someone's right there with him.
Everybody aspires to be them right now.
Yes.
Offensive line, no doubt.
And that's going to help Jalen Hurts. And as Jalen Hurts continues to get better, that only helps Saquon Barkley.
And they are nasty. More. Yeah, they're nasty up front. And what happens, the play-action game, not just the RPO game, the zone read game, the play-action game becomes real. And we've seen the receivers there with Brown and Devontae Smith. We saw exactly what Spagnuolo, who is as good a defensive coordinator, big-game defensive coordinator as there is in the world, Steve Spagnuolo, in last year's Super Bowl. And Vic Fangio ain't far behind, because we saw the game plan he dialed up against the Chiefs. Well, here's what happens when you have guys even like that. You got to sell out to do something. You can't let Saquon Barkley be the reason. If you're the defense, you going into that game, you cannot say, hey, we came out of this game. Guess what? Saquon Barkley kicked our ass. He ran for 175, caught 10 balls for 85 more yards, scored two touchdowns. He was the MVP. Oh, well, there's a shock. Spagnuolo went in saying, that guy's not beating us. It's kind of the Bill Belichick thing where their best player's not going to beat me if we're doing what we're supposed to do. Somebody else will have to. Well, Jalen Hurts in the clutch, both Devontae and A.J. Brown scored in the game, if I'm not mistaken, Sags on big plays. And those are the things that they may have to come out firing that early, even though the Cowboys' front seven's not near what you're going to face with Chris Jones in the Super Bowl. But that ability now, just by people who are going to watch the tape of moving forward, say, if we sell out to Saquon, we are going to be in trouble on the perimeter. And aside from that, say, with the protection they'll have, then the opposite becomes true. And Trey made such a great point about the touches and the wear and tear. You may get more production from Saquon, when I don't mean 2,000 yards, but equal type of production on catches and runs where he's in the 1,500-yard range and 70 catches or whatever it is, because there'll be more space to work in because he can touch it less and still have more production because of the focus on keeping people away and playing too deep not to give up the big play, which gives you a fair and friendly box to a run game where we like to run it versus two high safeties.
Yeah, and I think he can be utilized even greater in the passing game this year, where then you're not taking those hits, you know, going 3 yards and everybody's falling on you.
Right.
And, you know, you don't have big defensive tackles, big defensive ends hitting you every play. I mean, because he's one of the best receiving running backs in the league. I mean, so you can utilize him in different ways.
That's a home run hitter, Sags, right?
Yes. Last year it worked on the ground and they stuck to it and they rode him all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and impressive.
It's just they're a wagon. they are clearly the best team walking into the league right now. And yes, there's some nipping at their heels, but just both sides of the ball, they can be dominant. And we could see another really, really good season from the Eagles.
No doubt. Kim Hall, Lucy, we see that great stuff, and you're so right. And also to wherever Phillip Birds, wherever you are, and Dr. J, you guys better be busy. I don't see you up here making comments. I'm coming to get you guys. Excuse me. What were you going to ask, Segs? And I know you had a couple other topics on your mind.
Yeah. The one thing that I took from Trey that kind of, I don't want to say shocked me, but intrigued me the most that he said was he sees Saban coming back more so than Belichick going back to the NFL. I mean,
even with $1 million buyout instead of the $10 million buyout, it was a great point.
I mean, Nick Saban, I don't know. Like, why would you leave Alabama? Unless he just saw Alabama slowly kind of trickling downward and he said, let me get out now with the NIL stuff. Let me get out.
It drove him crazy.
Kind of figure some things out. Let me see which schools are willing to put money forward to help a roster. Because I saw, I can't remember which Alabama. A former white Alabama quarterback. You can name 15 of them.
There's a whole bunch of them, dude. Yeah.
This one doesn't play. I think it was Greg McElroy, now that I think about it.
He was a good broadcaster, too.
Yes. He said that he has talked to multiple people inside Alabama that say they don't even have $20 million to spend on their roster, whereas other teams have $40 to $50 to $60 million in their war chest to spend.
And, you know, Segs, in all the years, Saban's a great coach. That's such a Captain Obvious statement. But he'll even tell you that where his expertise has always been is his ability to recruit great players and keep them on campus.
Yes.
And so even as a great coach, which we know, and hiring great assistants that get shit done, Saban's baby was not only the defensive backs, but is recruiting.
Yes.
And he lost that advantage when you could outpay him. Texas Tech can outpay Alabama by $1 billion because of that West Texas oil and gas money. The key here is that what happens, in my opinion, Nick, who's so dominant, he always get good players, but then the coaching and the recruiting edge. He'd get two more than you and has great coaches. So he'd always have the advantage. Now, even when you get him, number one, you got to recruit them while they're there as opposed to just recruiting them to get them there, now to keep them there. And then all of a sudden it gets even because, Kirby's given more money. Texas Tech's giving more money. I don't care if you're a legacy player that your dad played there. Oh, they're giving him $1 million more. Oh, go to UT or go to Southern Cal. So that brought this to here. And it's like, well, how do I continue to do this without getting out of hand, knowing that while we may have money, Alabama's not doing what others are doing. So it forces the hand. And I think about Nick, and I think Trey's 100% right. We know the coaching bug doesn't leave. It's can you resist going back in, and how much do you love what you're doing? Bill in college, Nick on the set, who does a phenomenal job on on College Game Day, teaching us and getting up on the board and telling us, and I love it. But that itch is always there. The question is how big and how bad do you want to scratch it? With Saban, the only thing for me, and I'm with Trey because I still think maybe the freshness in our mind about still winning with Nick Saban, yeah. Right? And we get to hear him on TV every week, so we still crave him, where Bill was on with the Mannings, but kind of a little more distant with it, right? I think that if DeBoer got fired, would Nick go back or would he feel like that's that I had to would it get this? It's almost not that he's begging, because you don't have to beg Nick Saban. I mean, Nick doesn't have to beg for anything, but almost like, all right, let me go back. I'm bored and go back. You know what? Because I don't think he wants that perception. The other side is I have a hard time thinking that Nick Saban would go coach anywhere else, but I can tell you two spots that I believe he would entertain in my mind.
Okay, because I have two as well.
The University of Texas, but he's got his guy there in Sark. Okay. And yep. I know the Longhorns. And there's probably more. But I damn well tell you, and maybe somewhere in Florida, which we can get to, but I think he'd entertain my Trojans. I do.
Okay.
I think he'd entertain the Trojans. Now, Lincoln's there. We'll see if 73 points carries over to the Big Ten schedule.
Right.
But I think that, well, first of all, we have enough money to make it worth his while. But that private big money, they got plenty of. The question is they want to spend it. They're starting to spend it. Secondly is, he's got L.A. and the, you know, he can still do all the stuff, even though it doesn't have the small Tuscaloosa field that I know he and Miss Terry love, right? But there's also egos involved with all this. And Nick would have recruiting base, put a fence around L.A. He would have a tremendous amount of money to work with.
Yes.
And it wouldn't take long to win. And the truth is, while John McKay, remember, John McKay, John Robinson, you've been plenty of guys removed from those legends, even though Nick is the biggest legend coming in. So those are you would consider. And then I'm thinking, would he feel like he was letting Alabama down after all he did there, because those are his people going somewhere else? But we know that money, ego, and all that, and a chance to continue your greatness is hard to turn down. So you don't even – my two don't match your two. Who are the
No,
other
they
two?
Don't, actually.
Okay, who are the two that you would think that would be possible?
The first one, I have a hard time seeing him here because of the area, because of how
he likes
things
to
go
boat,
down there.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Miami. The money is there. He would not even have to entertain. Like, everything would be taken care of for him at Miami. We've already seen it.
Any brushback or high type fastball up in the kitchen because of the Miami Dolphins' lack of success? When he was there?
Possibly.
He didn't have the quarterback. Remember, he passed on Breeze and Culpepper was still hurt.
Right.
And he never quite had the quarterback.
Right. The Miami boosters, the Miami fans, they crave so much to get the Hurricanes back to early 2000s, the
Swagger.
90s, the 80s. Yes. Getting back to and he would do that. I mean, they already bring in good recruits. They spend a ton of money. We see him getting.
And he's the best recruiter in the world without money. Right.
There's no doubt. And that's a team I could see if Mario Cristobal struggles again this year or doesn't reach the level that they think they should be at, he could be out. So then that job could be available. But again, it's Miami. It's South Beach. Does he want to deal with kids?
And he likes the water. He likes his boat.
He likes the water. But it's kids partying down there. Will that drive him insane? Tuscaloosa is its own little world that he can control.
It's not really a college town, even though Miami's it's like L.A. He can't control it. There's a lot of distractions, and the distractions drive the guy crazy.
Yes.
Right. Which I'm sure watching Bill Belichick with the girl on the sidelines, it's probably driving Nick crazy for his buddy seeing her on the sidelines, which we'll get to another day. So what else?
For sure. My second team kind of fits more that college town feel. Another team that, with another season, I mean, they were really bad last year, but with a season that doesn't go as well as they think it should, Florida State and Tallahassee.
That's why I said Florida.
It's a big, you know, it's a power program.
It's the king bringing it back to Bobby Bowden's times. He would be the king. I mean, bigger king down there in Florida, right?
Exactly. So, and again, the recruiting base, you're in Florida. Like, kids want to go to Florida, Florida State, Miami, if they're in Florida. And so you're just plucking blue chip prospect after, and they have money to spend as well. So I think those two stand out to me as jobs that could definitely be open, but I do really like the SC one as well, because if it doesn't go well, I know Lincoln Riley is Lincoln Riley, but USC, they don't bullshit down there. They don't.
And Segs, as much as I hope it works for Lincoln, because I love him. He's a great guy. But they got to play defense. They got to win. It's a production business. You know, you have to. But I can tell you this, if it didn't work out, he absolutely has to be your first call.
Absolutely.
You say, here's an open checkbook, dude. We'll support you anywhere you want. Because, where I disagree with Kim down here, and Kim's got plenty of great stuff. One, he's not too old to build what he started at Alabama to start over. They wouldn't have to start over at Alabama. Right. All they do is have a few retooling and to get that the respect when he walks in the door already has people. It's not like he'd be going to, no disrespect to Mississippi State, but he didn't have to go right there and fix that. Secondly, and as far as starting over, if he had to go to a program that was the ninth best team, of course he would. He's going to go to a blue, if he does, if he ever leaves, which I think we crave, he's going to go to a blue blood program where he can, where they've given him all the support and he can kind of build a little wall around him, not having to see the NIL stuff, even though he's dealing right in it. And yeah, he'd have to change his mindset about it. And also, Kim, Miami doesn't have the skill players they used to. And there's a reason, because they don't have the best recruiter in the world doing it. I got news for you. Within about 50 square miles of the University of Miami, there are a million skilled players. Well, yeah, yes, a little hyperbolic, that you can go find, and then you got to develop. Yes, are Ray Lewis's and Michael Irvin's walking around falling, you know, where they just fall out of a truck and land in your lap? No, but there's guys that are talented like that every year. The key is finding them and developing. So I don't think that Nick Saban, he wouldn't go somewhere. He ain't going to University of Arizona. Even though Arizona's a decent program and gotten better, he ain't going there. But if he did come back, it's going to be a blue blood program that opens up a pocketbook, that lets him do whatever he wants when it comes to NIL, even though he drives him crazy, just like fast-paced, high-powered offenses drove him crazy. He wanted to play slow, win 17-14, and let his defense do their job and slow it down, throw it 18 times, and beat your ass running the football. Well, he had to switch. He hired Lane Kiffin and Sarkisian to wide open. If you can't beat him, you join him. And what did he do? Still play great defense, learn something new, hire people that do something that drives. He hired people that drove him crazy on their offenses, right? Not the guy, but, oh, I'm going to hire somebody. The best thing to do is hire somebody that beats you at your own game, right? That beats you playing fast pace. So what Nick do? Goes and gets those guys. And now look, dude, if I'd have told you 30 years ago, University of Texas, University of Oklahoma, and Alabama would be throwing it as much as most teams in the country, you'd have looked at me and said I was out of my friggin' mind. And now, and LSU. Yeah. Now look at these four. They want to play defense, but the good ones know how to adjust and adapt. And there's been nobody in the history of college football better than Nick Saban. Segs, you mentioned to me, but and I'll get your take. I was on my Framber Valdez. Just a quick spot of basketball. I mean, of baseball here today, which, you know, both you and I love. Matter of fact, I think most of our conversations of life have probably stemmed around more baseball than anything. Is, you know, he goes, throws a pitch when Salazar wants him to back off as a catcher. He doesn't back off. And Frommer's had the history. I'm not going to bore people. Go back and look. He has a history of, well, being an emotional wreck, wearing his emotion on his sleeve. He gets sideways for one inning, and you don't know what you're going to get. When he's on, he's as good as Scooble. He's as good as any left-hander in baseball. That's why he's going to get paid. It's just not going to be at the Astros at the end of this year. They're not going to pay him that much. Plus, the trust factor in, can I run him out? I'd run Hunter Brown out first if it was an elimination game before I'd run out Framber. Now, the emotional wreck, when you say he's got it all, well, he's got it all when it comes to stuff, but the emotion sometimes trumps the stuff, and it becomes a problem. So he gives up a grand slam to the Yankees and then comes back, and he's pissed. Salazar, you know, they're pushing it. And their explanation of, well, was just I pushed the wrong button. Crossed we couldn't up. Hear. Crossed him up. So Salazar's looking off speed stuff. And Framber throws 93 and hits him in his gut with the fastball. And it, regardless of the explanation, Fromber's childish when it comes to this. Great talent, childish. There you see. Now, I want you one more time. Blow that whole screen up. Take us off here for 1 second if you can. If that's possible, Triple E. If not, no big deal. But I want you to watch this again now. Think about when you cross a catcher up, Segs, or you cross your kid up, or your dad when you're playing catch. You step towards him and say, hey, man, my bad. Look at this. Bam. Turns his back to him. The catcher looks at him. His head snaps around like, are you out of your motherfucking mind right now?
Right.
Watch him again. And so explanation, oh, we're friends and it happened. He looks at him like, dude, And then he turned his back to him, like, don't even approach me right now. So right. All that being said, the emotional wreck that is Framber Valdez at times drives me crazy. Sakes, because he's so friggin' good. Now, I talked to GM Dana Brown this morning, as I do every Wednesday. I asked him, and you know what? I said, Dana, come on, man. You can't tell me. It's a cross-up. Yes, they crossed up. But there's something deeper than this, because Framber was pissed. He goes, Sean, listen, they've worked it out in the clubhouse after. It was a cross-up. He was frustrated, and he's a competitive guy. So he answered the question.
Yes.
Framber Valdez was out of hand last night, and you got to rein him in. He goes, Sean, he's a linebacker that emotionally sometimes lose it. The problem is, as a pitcher, you can't be. You can be a bulldog and a linebacker, but you can't get sideways, because in a three-game series like last year, what happened to the Astros? Got swept in two by Skubal and the Tigers. So if you're ace at the front of the staff, would you ever say, hey, man, I'm worried about Smoltz's bulldog mentality?
No.
Or Maddox, or Hunter Brown, or Tarek Skubal, or Pedro Martinez. You know the group I'm talking about. If you're going to be my ace, I can't let a grand slam get you so sideways against the Yankees. Matter of fact, even more so, I need you engaged, number one. Number two is, it's just childish bullshit, as much as I like Framber. Let's call it like we see it. To do that to your catcher. And then the catcher said, well, I picked the wrong pitch. Well, you know why that didn't hold water? Because if you did pick the wrong pitch, you were calling for off speed. And if you knew you picked the wrong pitch and he was being stubborn, you'd have set up for fastball and it wouldn't have hit you clean.
Right.
So the whole, and Dana got to it without saying, yes, Sean, he was childish and emotional. He didn't say it. He called it competitive and getting after it and a bulldog type of mentality. Framber Valdez is going to be a problem if they get sideways early in a game, because I'm not sure, Segs, if he can emotionally handle it. He's going to get a lot of money somewhere else. It won't be in Houston next year. And I wouldn't pay him $33 million for 5 years, a year for 5 years, because the emotion eventually is going to get in the way of his success. It just always does.
Yeah, I mean, you just hit on something. You talked about the great pitchers in our lifetime that we've seen over the last, just say, 25 years. Don't have that emotional, where they just fly off the handle.
Well, not only that, you're emotional. The emotion
fragility.
Where's
they're too so fragile.
Right. Yes. That's exactly. And listen, while I say that, the fragility that goes along with it. Listen, he's a smart, high. He's a competitor. All that, but you can compartmentalize. You can be competitive, and even if you're sweating it out and you're pissed, you got to get back locked in the second your foot's back on the rubber,
right.
Correct?
Well, and that's where I look at guys like Pedro Martinez, if you want to go right now, Chris Sale, Randy Johnson in the past, guys that they pitched with fire all the time. Like, their hair was on fire all the time when they were pitching. One little thing would set them off. But when they got set off, they came back with their best fuck you pitches over and over and they just beat you down. Even if they gave up a home run, that you were getting Sale's best slider or his best changeup for the next four pitches, and you had no chance. Whereas Framber just comes back and he just throws meatballs when he's pissed off.
He was stubborn and threw it right down the cock for the grand slam home run because he's pissed. Well, I locate it. No, he didn't locate it. Right. Every major leaguer I know, when you throw it right down the cock, the good ones are going to hammer it. The average ones are going to hammer it.
I think it was Mark DeRosa on MLB Network said he blames Anthony Volpe because he took a 1-0 fastball right down the middle coming off the grand slam. Like, that ball should have been in the seats as well. It was 93 right down the middle. Like, you've got to hammer that ball. But don't give me the bullshit that he got crossed. This is the PitchCom era. Everybody hears what is called.
Right.
Even players in the field.
And if you don't, what do? You go out, you time out. You go out, you say, dude, can you hear me okay? And then, like I said, if there was no explanation after the game, all I got to do is put the video on. You say, you don't know anything about this.
Right.
Tell me what you think. Volpe looked at him like, what the hell is good? Look at his reaction in the batter's box. He then watched Salazar's reaction like, you want to fucking fight, dude? Well, here's one you don't like. Throw it right down the cock. Yeah, if he located that, then that ain't location. And Framber's usually good. He's a ground ball pitcher. He got it up a little bit. Ball's hammered opposite field. Now,
I want to know what pissed him off more. Was it the step back off the mound, or was it giving up the grand slam? I think it was the stepping off the mound.
Agreed. It was almost as if he said, no, you're not going to tell me to step off. I'm ready to pitch.
Hey, rookie, shut up and just be back there and catch
Salazar's the ball. Young, and he's a third string catcher. You know, with Diaz.
He's only had 14 career starts.
Right. 14. So with that, Segs, Volpe's looking at him like, are these two out of their mind? He's looking at like he's looking at Salazar like, dude, you're dealing with this today? And he does take it, but he was dumbfounded. But you don't need to know anything about the Grand Slam, none of it. All you had to do was say, see the hand before the Grand Slam, and then flip to that video right there where the catcher snaps his head, doesn't even look at the ball when he gives, but snaps his head like, dude. And Fromber turns like he she just turns broke up with back. Him, and yep. he turns his back like, don't you dare talk to me, right? So, and I'm glad Dana, without saying it, said, because you have to guard against criticizing your pitcher, but in the process saying, he's competitive. But you can be competitive without being an asshole. And I know this in old school baseball, there would have been a fight in the clubhouse if Lance Parrish is your catcher or one of those guys. There would have been a little bit different. Somebody would have been grabbed around the nape of the neck, and there might have been a Rob Dibble, Lou Piniella situation in the clubhouse right. back in the day.
Well, and this wouldn't have happened with Martin Maldonado or, you know, any Hell of these no. catchers.
He'd have gone better, out and dressed veteran. His ass down on the mound.
Exactly. And that's the thing, you know, I spent seven-ish years in Houston through all the good times, you know, from I basically showed up at the end of the tanking to all the World Series, the right. cheating scandal, all that. I was there in Houston. But what it doesn't seem like Houston has now, and they've let them all go. They brought one back, but is that leader. Altuve is not that voice guy. He's never going to step up and say.
Just a fun guy by example. That's right.
George Springer and Alex Bregman would have never let that go. They would have whooped Framber's ass in the clubhouse themselves. Right. And Correa kind of seems like that guy, but I don't
he's
know.
He's that guy on the field where yes. he goes and you know what I'm saying? Yes. And he's the heel right. when they're against another team. But I think they're all tread lightly around Framber in the clubhouse.
Because they know.
Because it's just like when somebody said, well, what if you start Hunter Brown in the opening playoff series? You may lose Fromber the whole time because he'll pout right. his ass off.
Yes.
That's
yes.
the emotional wreck. Even if the matchup was better, let's start Hunter in the first one. Well, what are you talking about? I'd be afraid he'd go into the friggin' tank. And that, and you like this and throwing that pitch, it was almost as if to say, you didn't get me what I wanted for Christmas. I'll show you. And you yep. just can't have that. It's, and I'm telling you, I had Smoltz on Segs on the morning show. He everybody that comes on, it raves about Fromber stuff, but it always ends in but.
Right.
But. And that but is the emotional. If a quarterback was emotional as him, I don't mean energetic like Favre was, where the emotion got in the way of you doing what you do, it becomes a problem. All right, Segs, I'm going to save tomorrow. We talked about I'm going to save the Kawhi Leonard stuff.
Because I'm sure we'll learn some more information throughout right. the day.
Pablo Torre, who's a deep dive guy and been in journalism for a long, about this $28 million that he and Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers, and he also is the one who funded the tree cutting down company or tree planting right. company.
Aspiration.
One of the two. Right. We're going to discuss that tomorrow because this belongs at the top and with much more conversation. And I don't want to take people to 1:30. Although we would if necessary, but that's the great thing about 5 days a week. We're going to hit that hard tomorrow, as well as a deep dive preview on the Cowboys, Segs, and the Eagles, and kind of leading into the college football weekend, which you're going to get all the time, and with strong opinion, and with the information that hopefully we're providing you that you say, okay, that's what I want to be around every day, but it deserves the Kawhi Leonard part. I know it's football, but when this comes up, this is
it's well, a massive story.
It's a huge story.
Because this could go on all over sports. This isn't just a basketball thing. This could go anywhere.
Well, who owns most of the billionaires with a B, not an M? Right. Billionaires own pro sports franchises. And what would stop anybody from saying, I'm going to buy this company, $50 million a drop in the bucket, in order to pay a couple extra guys through this? There's no different than, you know, opening up your LLC in Bermuda or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I got an overseas account. What's the difference? Other than location. So we're going to talk about how, you know, the cover of this and how deep down dirty is it? Or is it? Is it all fair and love and war? So we'll discuss that. And Kawhi Leonard, plus it's more than 28 million Segs because he plays like once every 4 days with load management. Yeah. So he's like even numbers. More per game. Yeah, I can't wait to hear that. So we will dive into that tomorrow among phenomenal, good, deep football talk and stuff that actually matters towards this weekend's games. And we'll hit more on it. And I thought I saw a clip today where a broadcaster, and I'll leave his name out, has already declared that Arch Manning is a bust. He's on TV all the time, is a bust, and he's not a generational talent. Now, I got news for you. If you can figure that out in one start against a good team, then you need to get into a different line of work, because you are really good at evaluating talent, especially when you didn't play that position, evaluating that talent. If you can evaluate it that quickly among that family faster than they can, then I would suggest you do something that can make you billions of dollars as opposed to the millions you may be making on television.
Man, what would he have said about Peyton Manning's rookie year?
Well, you mean when he led the league in interceptions and threw 28 of them and everybody, oh, he's a bust?
He would have cut him, and we would have
After the first half. Yes. After the first half. Yeah, well, Bryce Young was done too, right? It turns like he's turned he's okay. Elway, dude. Aikman and Elway, they're done, dude. Yeah.
Struggle.
I tell you what, I wish I had those evaluation skills that in one game against the third-ranked team in the country, who's now number one,
that
I could actually say, you know what? Never be a generational talent and isn't any good.
He's done.
Overrated. Yep. I confess, we might as well start the backup in UT.
Clown show.
But there's that, out there that will allow you to believe it.
Of Trey Wingo was him just torching the dumbass media that we see daily on Twitter. You see all the clips, because I damn sure don't watch their shows, but I just see the stupid clips of
when somebody shares
all the them out by name. Yes. I just love that Trey Wingo did that, and he didn't care. He said, me and Coward may not be friends anymore. And that's
social
great
media.
Because that's what we need more of, is the guys like you and Trey that have been in the media for 25 years to just keep calling them out. Just keep calling these clowns out.
Social media allows me to see the clips because I don't watch it. Matter of fact, I'm too busy watching Golf Channel, so I don't watch any of that.
Yes.
But I do. My job is to prepare and stay up. So I'll see a clip, and I'm like, what? And he said what? It's baffling to me. And you know what he said that's just so true? Is about the flip-flop 180 degrees of, you know, what you say and what you believe, and now it's flip-flopped 100%. That the sport was, you don't take yourself too seriously, but you take the sport seriously, right?
Yeah.
Or the job. Now it's flipped where you're taking the sport. You're not taking serious, but you're taking yourself really serious, which makes for uncomfortable TV, because in truth, it's an entertainment business that hopefully has got facts that support it. And the last thing I want to hear is, well, so if somebody has a bad game this week in the NFL and they're young,
they're done. It don't matter.
Finished, right?
They're done.
Okay. Yeah. Then we're going to end the show on that. That done.
Got them.
What about a broadcast? What about a broadcast that has a bad show? Segs mispronounces somebody's name.
You know what?
We're allowed to do
it
that.
Happens in the world. We don't need to make fun of them or anything. We just
But
we just leave that for the pro athletes. Yeah, just quarterbacks really. Yeah.
Well, we'll do it again tomorrow. Segs, take it away, brother. It was great stuff today. We'll be back at 1 o'clock Eastern. Have a way with it, my man.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great show. A lot of great analysis from Trey Wingo, and
no shock there. He's really good.
If you missed it, go check it out on Rumble, YouTube. Check out his new podcast,
Spotify, iTunes,
all everywhere you can find it. And his podcast, Straight Facts Homie, love that name.
And mixed with the data is going to be really good, because when he brought the data up about Saquon, I'm like, it's logical, but when you validate it, it was awesome. Trey, great stuff.
Yeah, just the fact that he has all those numbers and he just rattles.
Dude, he's a fanatic about that stuff. Because like when he'd close out commercials, he'd hit it hard. I mean, we were going to break, but that's the stuff now you get to see for a full show. And that is nothing more than evidence.
Yep.
And it's a good thing. And then backed by good guests who come on and validate it as well. And then it gives you something to look at. Man, are they going to fall off like that? And I am now keeping an eye on Saquon Barkley's touches and what they do offensively to alleviate some of it. But can he come back and give you the same type of season? He's a stud. Now, his legs look like they can carry a stadium anyway.
Oh,
so
for sure.
I'm going to trust that he's going to be okay to do it. But
yes.
Great stuff by Trey Wingo. Segs, I'll let you throw us away, and we'll do it again tomorrow. Brother, great stuff by you, and it's great to have you on the show on a daily basis, my man.
Yes, for sure. Make sure to tune in tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Central. We'll be talking a lot of Kawhi Leonard, and we'll break down Cowboys-Eagles tomorrow night. NFL season kicks off. We'll talk to you tomorrow, guys.